This is The 21st. I'm Brian Mackey. In 1987, biographer Jean Baker wrote, "Mary Todd Lincoln ranks among the most detested public women in American history," end quote. But like so much in American history these days, some historians say it's time for a reappraisal, specifically of the way we talk about Mary Lincoln and how she's been portrayed as quote-unquote crazy. Last summer, when we spoke with Christina Schutt, the new director of the Abraham Lincoln Presidential Library and Museum in Springfield, she brought up this very subject.
Mary Lincoln was someone who experienced immense amounts of grief, right? Having her children die, having literally like her husband die next to her or be assassinated next to her. And so the way in which we talk about her is something that I hope we'll be able to explore more. At the time, the way in which people experience and process grief was very different than maybe the ways and the grace that we give people to process grief and the death of children and the death of their spouse.
My next guest is among those who think we need to have a talk about the way we talk about Mary Lincoln. Alexis Coe is a historian and the author of the New York Times bestselling You Never Forget Your First, a biography of George Washington. She recently wrote two essays about Mary Lincoln on her Substack newsletter. I spoke with her in December, and with Lincoln's birthday this weekend, we thought this would be a good opportunity to revisit that conversation. So, Alexis, there's a lot you say that historians have gotten wrong about Mary Lincoln, who is often referred to as Mary Todd Lincoln. And let's start with that, which is her name. How have people misunderstood that?
Yes. You even see on the White House's website, the White House Historical Society, that they use Mary Todd Lincoln. And that's a formulation she never used. So we're all calling her by a name that she never went by. It was favored by William H. Herndon, who is a notorious Mrs. Lincoln hater. He was Lincoln's law partner. There was no, they disliked each other from the very beginning. And he pushed this because he sort of repackaged their whole story. He made a career off, paid speaking gigs. And he sort of demoted Mary Lincoln as the woman Lincoln ended up with, and promoted this woman that he dated, didn't love. And so it's really unfortunate because it seems like her nemesis may have won so far.
What do we know about her before the assassination of Abraham Lincoln?
Before she met Lincoln, she was, Southerner. She came from a pro-slavery family. And they were, of course, the Todds. And so that was, as many families experienced during the Civil War, a very painful rift, really fundamental. And Mary was also known, for being wearing very colorful dresses and having a bit of a spending problem. But why do we think she's crazy? That's the question. And it happened before the main event that we'll get to. But it's because she mourned her children. We know that she was next to Lincoln when he was assassinated, but she also, 3 out of 4 of her children predeceased her. That's quite a lot to think about. They predeceased her. Some lived to be, teenagers. Eddie died, her second son, when he was quite young, and she tore out her hair. And her third son, Willie, died, and he was quite well-known during the Civil War because, of course, just like the Kennedys, they had a young son. She was so overcome that she didn't leave her bed for weeks, and she missed the funeral. She wore black from then moving forward. She did wear black from the moment Lincoln died until the day she died, which was quite a bit later. But Mary's, what they would describe as conspicuous mourning, was unacceptable to society because it didn't display two fundamental values that a woman had to have in the 19th century, which was submissiveness, an emotion that or a physical reaction that was acceptable was, fainting, weeping, but just for a little. It otherwise had to be controlled, and also it lacked piety because death was a part of God's plan.
So, I mean, you write that women could faint on occasion, perhaps even weep at a moving scene, but sustained barefaced emotion was to be controlled in front of others. Can you talk a little bit more about, I think today you think of somebody who loses a child, let alone three or four children. They get a lot of grace, right? In public conversation and in private life as well. How was it different back then?
I mean, I hope that's true. You know, death, we often think that death was more common. And, you know, that's maybe not true given the last couple of years, but losing a child is losing a child. So it doesn't really matter if, you know, you got, you know, a day or 18 years, it's devastating. And for it to happen over and over and over again, is quite a lot. And of course, then we also have the mourning of Lincoln. What we now understand about Jackie Kennedy Onassis is that she was probably suffering from PTSD, and that explains some of her behavior in the years that followed the assassination. The same is true for Mary. She was deemed quite paranoid, and for good reason. Her husband had been assassinated. She felt threatened. She really had very few friends. She was barred from being in the room by Lincoln's cabinet after he was shot. So she didn't even get to be with him in his final moments. And she had very conspicuous reactions to that. And women were supposed to be, you know, seen and not heard. And if they were heard, it was usually, you know, answering a question they were asked.
So Alexis, let's talk about the insanity trial. This is, again, about a decade after the assassination. Who put her on trial?
Her only surviving child, Robert Lincoln. She thought she was in town to for the anniversary of her husband's assassination. And her son was a lawyer, a businessman. And of course, people were interested in him running for office based on his connection to the great emancipator. She, however, and she sees him that very morning, of May 19th, 1875. And he tells her, you know, I'll see you again later this afternoon. He wasn't lying, but it wasn't for, dinner.
Wink. Yeah.
Yeah. It was to see her in court, but he doesn't go and tell her himself. He sends a lawyer who had worked with Abraham Lincoln, Leonard Sweat, who is very short on patience when he knocks on that hotel room door.
You write about this trip to Chicago. She had had migraine headaches, right? And she had a hallucination where she thought she was seeing something awful happening to her son. I mean, did this play a role in the trial?
Absolutely. But they were looking for a reason. In early America, a woman could be put in an asylum for postpartum depression, for being a nuisance to a father, a brother, a husband. It was not hard. Doctors really didn't need to even meet the woman. Everyone who we'll talk about who testified, the medical experts, only a few had met her. She had, as I said, a big personality and also had a lot of really big events happen around her. So of course, when she wasn't allowed in the room when her husband was dying, she was making quite a production out of it. Why should cabinet members be in there and not his wife? And so she was having a migraine and she was wintering in Florida, but it felt different. It was sort of like a really lucid dream. And this is her only surviving family member. You know, three children, she's buried her husband. And so she just can't even, she telegrams him, she can't wait. So she takes the first train, bound for Chicago, and she goes right into his office. Now we're talking about Mary Lincoln, Mrs. Lincoln, the first widow. She walks into any place and everyone turns around, everyone looks, everyone, it is a conspicuous scene. So we don't really know if a lot of these things are accurate the way that they're described, but she had left in a hurry. So it's totally believable that her hair and her dress might not have been perfect, though, she cared about aesthetics. So I'm sure she looked pretty good. And it seemed fine. But the thing was, Robert had already been having this conversation. He wanted to run for office, and he was constantly told that she was either going to be a distraction simply by her presence, or that she would have some sort of episode that would embarrass him. You know, she had also auctioned off her colorful dresses because she only wore black, and that was embarrassing. Everything was embarrassing. And they just needed to make it stop in order to run Robert for office.
It's like the teenage son from hell. Everything is embarrassing from mom. All right, let me take a moment to reintroduce our talk. If you're just joining us, this is The 21st. I'm Brian Mackey, and we're revisiting my conversation with Alexis Coe, a presidential historian and New York Times bestselling author. Her books include You Never Forget Your First, a biography of George Washington. Last year, she wrote two essays on her Substack newsletter, one about how Mary Lincoln has been unfairly portrayed as quote-unquote crazy, and another about Mary Lincoln's insanity trial 10 years after her husband was assassinated. Because this conversation is on tape, we're not taking calls, but you can always let us know what you thought about our show by sending us an email. The address is talk at 21stshow.org. That's talk at 21stshow.org. Okay, back to my conversation with historian and author Alexis Coe. Let's go back to the trial then. So who you were talking about who testified, people who didn't even really know her. It's not as though sort of a modern trial where you have a, you know, forensic psychologist and they do interviews necessarily, right?
Right. Yes. There were, you know, it was well orchestrated. It was a kangaroo court, and the entire hearing lasted for about 3 hours. And of course, the only one who wasn't prepared, who didn't know what was happening, was Mary Lincoln. Robert's lawyer gave her a little bit of time to dress. He told her if she didn't hurry up, he would have her dragged to the court and handcuffed. And so 18 witnesses, including Robert Lincoln, her only surviving family member, testified to her mental state. And her lawyer, who Robert selected, who his sweat selected, didn't call a single witness in her defense. And the only questions he asked just a few of the doctors was to confirm their credentials. And that was it. He had no other questions. So they were vague. You know, they didn't have much to say except that she, you know, was having these episodes, that she had this this panic attack, that she, you know, lit out of Florida and all the way up to Chicago to see if her son was okay. We only started to understand PTSD, you know, not even time to really aid Vietnam vets. So we really have been quite slow about this. And a woman like Mary, who had experienced so much loss and so much trauma, the smallest bit of what they would deem a performance was called into question. That was evidence.
She ultimately ends up in this place called Bellevue outside of Chicago. What sort of facility was that?
Yes, after the all-male jury deliberated for all of 10 minutes, she ended up with a Dr. Robert Patterson, one of the doctors who had testified against her, even though they had never met. And it was for lady patients. This man, Patterson, Dr. Patterson, was known for handling problem women. And it was, it seemed to be on it was bucolic. There was a nice setting. The windows, though, you know, they had bars on them. And he insisted they were called ornamental screens. She had a nice time there. It's funny, for someone who was deemed insane and, you know, a threat to herself and other people, she had an awful lot of freedom. She was allowed to invite guests. The Patterson family gave her full use of their carriage. And she was kept away from the other patients. She took her meals, you know, not with everyone else, but in her private suite, or she was very often a guest in Patterson's kitchen with his family. He ate with them. She ate with them. So, you know, and when you go for dinner during this time period, you're in full dress. So everyone's being quite formal. They're sort of treating it almost like they're on vacation together. But Mary also, you know, she can't just receive visitors. She can also invite people. And so while Dr. Patterson is getting journalists to come and try and interview her, because of course it promotes Bellevue and it promotes him, and she'll refuse, but they'll still write those stories. She invites people too, including Mira Bradwell, who was the editor and business manager of the Chicago Legal News.
And the first woman admitted to the bar in Illinois. So ultimately, I mean, we need to fast forward a little bit because we only have a few minutes remaining in our conversation, but she ultimately turns things around and reconciles with her son to some extent, right?
Yeah. I mean, it's really an amazing story, but she, you know, she's not insane. And so a few months later, she is allowed to go live with her sister. And of course, all of a sudden, everyone thinks, well, if she's okay to live with her sister and she got this special treatment there, maybe she's not insane. Maybe she's telling the truth that her son is sort of pulling this. And a year later, she had another hearing and she was deemed, you know, she was restored, as they said, to her reason and her freedom. And she and Robert, she wrote Robert one last letter and he didn't respond and they didn't talk. Everything got better for Mary. Everything. Robert never did run for those offices. But, you know, people were nicer to her. Congress gave her a bigger pension. She started living abroad in a small commune in Southwest France. It was pretty nice. But this is so interesting. She felt like she was going to die. So she does have decent instincts. She came back to Springfield and she takes to bed. And who does she hope comes and sees her? Of course, Robert, along with her granddaughter. And she soon dies and she leaves Robert the entirety of her estate, which is worth, you know, I think $1.5 million today. But that wasn't a bed, you know, a sort of deathbed decision. She had asked Mira Bradwell to prepare a will years before, after he had put her away for insanity. So it's quite a dramatic and profound end to that story. And I think a lot of this really tells us her final act and the way she acted throughout her life. This is a really maternal woman who you know, was traumatized by her children in one way or another.
Well, Alexis Coe, I want to thank you so much for being with us and sharing your research with us today on the 21st.
Thank you so much for having me.
Alexis Coe is a historian and the author of the New York Times bestselling You Never Forget Your First, a biography of George Washington. And you can find her recent essays on Mary Lincoln, not Mary Todd Lincoln. She preferred Mary Lincoln. You can find them on her Substack newsletter. We'll link to that from our website, which is 21stshow.org. More to come on the 21st. Stay with us.